This is Graham Mack with Drive Time on BBC Radio Suffolk inside Old Trafford as we approach kick-off Ipswich Town's League Cup third round clash away at Manchester United. I'm seated in the south stand, starting to get a little louder with the stewards going through their drills and special guests enjoying the corporate hospitality in the restaurant behind me. Isaac Cherry is outside the west stand. He's going to be speaking to Town fans on the way inside to enjoy the match. In a career spanning four decades as a sports journalist with the East Anglian Daily Times, Ipswich star and Greenham editor Nick Garnham met and interviewed a host of international celebrities, national treasures and local personalities. He tells his story in his book called Scoop, which is out now. Reflecting on Town's heavy loss in 1995 when they were beaten by United here 9-0, his headline for the paper simply read, Humiliated.
Yeah, I only had to write the headline. Spare a thought for the reporters. I actually had to write a match report. But it was one of those, as each goal went in, so it became clear that Ipswich were going to get in a right hiding. And the headline grew. It was normally be two decks of headline in upper and lower. And we ended up with one headline blasted across the front page, simply saying humiliated. Which, to all intents and purposes, Ipswich Town were that afternoon, unfortunately.
Your book does cover in some detail glory days of Ipswich Town, though. Humiliated just takes up a kind of a minor part of a chapter. But boys of 78, you've got interviews with a lot of the team.
Yes, I was very fortunate. In fact, probably one of the highlights of my time at the paper was being privileged to interview all 12 players that appeared in the 1978 FA Cup final when we did the 30th anniversary. And that was just great for me because I was 17 when Ipswich won the FA Cup and those players were my idols. So to get the opportunity to interview them 30 years on in 2008 was something I felt very privileged to do.
There's a feature on bacon and eggs. You look at the Scottish influence in the team as well and the unlikely heroes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all the chapters were split down to sort of complement each other. Bacon and eggs, obviously most Ipswich fans will recognise that's about Alan Hunter and Kevin Beattie. Double Scotch is George Burley and John Walk.
David Sheepshanks wrote the foreword for the book as well, so how did that come about?
Yeah, I've known David, since he became an Ipswich Town director. And obviously, when I was looking for someone to write the book, I wanted someone who shared a passion for Ipswich Town, likewise cricket. Of course, David, like myself, now works for the FA, so it fitted right across the board that he was the perfect person to ask. And obviously, when you're getting someone to write a foreword for the book, you'd like to have someone with you know, a high profile, and David certainly fits the bill.
I think he would argue that he's possibly more of a cricket fan than he is a football fan. Is that the same with you?
Yeah, I love my non-league football, and I've been an Ipswich Town fan all my life, but if push comes to shove, cricket is my number one game.
You talk in the book about meeting and interviewing Sir Viv Richards, one of the greatest cricketers of all time. Likewise, Alistair Cook, although at the time that you met him, you probably didn't realise he was going to go on to the success that he's had.
That's right. He was a 14-year-old schoolboy. He'd been picked to play for England in an under-15 World Cup. And I got the opportunity to interview him, albeit not face-to-face. It was only a telephone conversation, but he came across as a very confident and polite young man, and little did I know, it wasn't until obviously several years later that he broke into the first team at Essex that occurred to me that the person I interviewed was the same person who was beginning to make waves and eventually went on to become not only a Test cricketer but an England Ashes winning captain.
As well as Alistair Cook, Viv Richards, the boys of 78, there's a story as well about doorstepping Bobby Robson. You mentioned non-league and local cricket, and I think my favourite story from the book is something that happened at Eastern Cricket Club, a village cricket club, back in 2000. They were the all-conquering Eastern Cricket Club at the time. Just tell us what happened.
Yeah, Eastern had joined the Two Counties Championship that season, and they'd won their first 10 games, and their 11th game was at home to Brightlingsea. And they were so far ahead on the table that a win against Brightlingsea would confirm promotion to Division 2. Eastern batted first. They were 7 for no wicket. About half an hour later, they were 14 all out. How you put that into context, I don't know. It was one of those sort of freak afternoons. There was some kamikaze shots played, apparently, and they just collapsed to a horrible defeat.
From 7 without loss to 14 all out, that's bigger than Japan beating South Africa at the Rugby World Cup, that is, for me.
Yeah, it was certainly an afternoon to forget for Eastern, like it probably was for South Africa on Saturday.
Now, the book's called Scoop. So where does that come from? Is that just referring to journalism in general and getting a scoop, getting a story before somebody else?
It's a double-edged headline. My nickname in cricketing circles has always been Scoop, and still to this day, people have known me a long time, refer to me by that. But yeah, obviously, as far as journalism goes, Scoop is what all journalists strive for. What exactly constitutes a scoop is a matter of opinion, but yeah, there's one or two little nuggets in the book that I think you know, people enjoy. Certainly the Alistair Cook interview, whether I was the first person to interview him, I don't know, but certainly being one of the first.
You kind of touch on changes in technology over the years as well, and in recent years, the impact of social media, which is probably meaning less scoops, because these days clubs can just tweet news. Some people can tweet news before it happens. Clubs will tweet things like team news, injuries, transfers sometimes before any form of media can get hold of an exclusive. Has that, or did that towards the end of your reporting days, take some of the romance out of the job?
Definitely. I do feel for people in the industry now, it is so hard to get hold of a story and hang on to it because there are so many various platforms and outlets that stories can be leaked by or just naturally come out. I mean, nowadays everyone's got a mobile phone and you know, people take photographs and tweet things, put them on Facebook, and it is very, very hard to get hold of a story and sit on it for any length of time. And I remember during my time at the paper, we often had that moral dilemma. Do we hold on to a story for another 24 hours or will it come out? And sometimes we'd say, well, let's sit on it. We're pretty confident that's not going to come out anywhere else. Lo and behold, you know, it would. And obviously, by the time we then printed, the story would be downsized because it's been out elsewhere.
I think you talk about one in the book where you managed to go on holiday and sit on a story. That's incredible. It just wouldn't happen now at all.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Part 10 of the book is titled Change of Scenery, and it talks about your switch from local newspaper journalism to the Suffolk FA. And you're pleased with that? It's working out?
Yeah, it's about getting on for two and a half years since I left Archant, publishers of the East Anglian, the Star and the Green, where I spent 32 years. Largely happy years, but all good things to come to an end. And this opportunity came up at Suffolk FA. And although initially I was happy to stay at the paper,
I was going to say, were you nervous about it at the time?
Oh, obviously, I think, you know, when you've been somewhere so long, it gets harder in some respects to make that break. But other people have done it and been successful. And I thought when I weighed things up, it was time for me to move on. And there's no doubt that had I still been at the paper